The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
And now, Sports Talk 1240.
Good evening and welcome to Sports Talk 1240 on this Sunday evening, May 3rd, 2015. My name is Raymond Mora, and beside me are two co-hosts. One who came back here on the show is Unkwa.
What's up, folks?
And I also got one here who's brand new, and he works for me also in York College. Watch out, applause.
Hey, how's it going, Ray?
Yep, it's good. And today's program, we're going to have ESPN Radio host Freddie Coleman to talk about the NBA playoffs. And we're going to have NFL writer Thomas Emmerich who talk about the NFL draft, the Jets and Giants as well. So let's start off with a little bit more about in playoffs right now, because we're going to have Freddie Coleman here come in about a minute or two. First round. What do you guys think of the first round?
Okay, first of all, I want to make one thing very clear. None of us, neither of us, neither Graciano nor I actually work for this guy. We work with this guy. We're going to make that clear from the jump. But the first round of the playoffs, it's so funny. Almost all of these matchups, at least in the West, you would have thought they'd have been second round matchups. Especially Clippers Spurs.
Yeah.
What a classic game seven from last night.
I mean, Chris Paul made an unbelievable shot. And, I mean, what can I say? He that whole series is probably that whole first game of that the first round, though, that was probably one of the best games I've seen in a while, the best series in a while. It went back and forth, and it was just crazy. Guashan, what do you think of that?
Yeah, speaking about, you know, first round matchups, I mean, all of them were pretty, like, you know, watching them. But tuning into the game last night, that definitely felt like a, you know, a finals game. I mean, the Clippers and, you know, the Spurs. Who would have thought, or who even wanted both of them, you know, facing so early? Like, it was just sad that one of them had to, you know, lose. And, you know, eventually, you know, Clippers came out on top.
And certainly we will. Now, we have been ESPN Radio host Freddie Coleman talk about NBA playoffs. And first of all, Mr. Coleman, it's an honor for you to be on the show. I respect you all the way, you being talking about sports. I always thought that you had probably one of the best insights in ESPN Radio, that you should be doing more than the night shift. But I'm thankful for you on the show. How's everything?
Everything is good, and I thank you for those kind words. But I always tell people, the nighttime is where it's at, because by the time they get around to it the next day, we've already dissected it and discussed it and probably did it a lot better than they did anyway.
Exactly. That was pretty good.
Was that a little bit over the top? I just wanted to make
sure. That was pretty good. That was pretty good, though. All right, so I want to just, before we get into the second round, I wanted to talk about a little bit of the first round. What do you think of the Clippers and Spurs game? Because, you know, I thought coming to the series, I thought Clippers will probably win the series in seven games. I thought Spurs and defending championship and the pedigree and everything that will push them to seven games. And Paul made an unbelievable shot yesterday. What can we expect from the Clippers now?
That's a really good question, because as much fight and stick-to-itiveness that they showed in that series, when you play a series like that, you have to wonder how that's going to affect you into the second round, because the West is just loaded with minefields. You have a seven-game series like that where the road team won three games in that series, won three games in a row, as a matter of fact, and San Antonio gave it everything they had. Anybody that needed to step up, they were able to do that. But Chris Paul had one of the all-time great seven series, I think, in the history of the NBA, and not just because it was a first-round matchup. But Doc Rivers is even concerned what kind of Chris Paul we're going to see in the second round, because not so much physical energy that he was able to put out there, but that mental energy, putting this team on his shoulders and leading them across the finish line. But I will say this. Chris Paul said he's going to be next to those trainers a lot more than his wife between yesterday and Monday when they get ready to game one. So Doc Rivers has to be cautious, but I guarantee you Chris Paul's been waiting for an opportunity to shut up the naysayers. He's not going to let an injury like this set him back if he can help it.
All right.
Hi, Freddie. Unkwa Sonia here. Thanks for joining us tonight. I want to look east for a little bit. You know, Atlanta's the number one seed in the East, a 60-win team, but they haven't really gotten much respect, personally for me, or I think really nationwide. Does that kind of contribute to that because they don't really have a bona fide superstar, or is it just that they snuck up on people this season?
Oh, both are right as far as I'm concerned, because I think in the day and age of the NBA, they don't have that LeBron or Kevin Durant or somebody you can say, okay, that's the best player in the team, and that's going to be the kind of basketball team that I want to root for, at least try to get to know about. I know they remind a lot of people the San Antonio Spurs, but we know Tim Duncan, we know Tony Parker, we know Manu Ginobili, and we're going to continue to get to know a guy like Kawhi Leonard, who I think is going to be one of the better players in the NBA the next 2 to 3 years. If you ask anybody outside of Atlanta who's the best player in the Atlanta Hawks, you're going to get a blank stare. You'll get somebody saying Dominique Wilkins, because that may be the only guy that they know from the Atlanta Hawks. So it wasn't a fluke that they won 60 games. But I think we saw today in Game 1 versus Washington, John Wall was so good at controlling the pace with his basketball team in the fourth quarter. He's impossibly hard to keep out of the lane because of that quickness and that first step. By him collapsing that defense and being that guy, he created open opportunities for Otto Porter or for Nene or for Marcin Gortat. Paul Pierce gets better shots because he's in the ball game with John Wall. So I think that's something that Atlanta has to guard against. And I'm not going to say they've lost the series, even though they lost home court advantage tonight. But because they don't have that one guy, sometimes it's Jeff Teague, another time it's Al Horford. DeMar Carroll today was terrific in the first quarter, where he had 21 points in the first half, but he didn't have any points in the fourth quarter. At a certain point, I think their starters need to be on the court a little bit more because they have a deep team, but I think those guys need to play a little bit more. And who's going to be that guy down the stretch that can do to them, that can do to the Washington Wizards what John Wall was able to do to the Atlanta Hawks today in Game 1?
All right. Hey, Freddie, how's it going? Graciano speaking here.
It's a pleasure to talk to you guys, man. How are you?
I'm fine. Thanks for asking. So we're zeroed in now to 8 teams in the NBA playoffs, and I just want to ask you this question. With the Hawks and Wizards playing Cavs, Bulls, you know, Clippers and Rockets and Grizz and Warriors, is there a clear-cut team that is the favorite, or can everyone, you know, left, or I should say remaining in this playoffs, you know, get an equal shot at that Larry O'Brien trophy?
I still think it's the Golden State Warriors. I still think that basketball team, the way that they play, and I know we see the end result of all the great three-pointers that Steph Curry will make, or Klay Thompson. Draymond Green has been unbelievable for this basketball team, but people fail to realize two things about the Golden State Warriors. Number one, they led the NBA in the regular season scoring margin at over 10 points per game. And number two, they are an underrated defensive team. They have so many different guys that can guard multi positions. And then they bring in a Sean Livingston and an Andre Iguodala, Festus Ezeliu off the bench. It seems like they get longer when they bring those guys in for their starters. Steve Kerr and his staff, led by Alvin Gentry, they've done an outstanding job of not only teaching the defense, but making adjustments when they have to deal with people. If you play an up-and-down, wide-open style of game, the defense has been able to combat that. If you play inside-out, like you're going to see from the Memphis Grizzlies, they feel they have enough guys in the front line and a guy, Draymond Green, that can help in Andrew Bogut. Now David Lee is going to get some time. That's another 6'9", 6'10 defender that Marc Gasol and Zach Randolph are going to have to deal with. So that's still the one team, in my opinion, that if there's not a clear-cut favorite, but I put them atop of everybody else, because whatever style of game you want to play, Golden State has shown the ability that they can play at that style and win that way. And then when things get tight, you have Steph Curry and Klay Thompson on your team, and nobody else has that in the NBA. And those two guys create so many problems because of their ability not only to shoot the basketball, but get wide-open looks and better shots no matter what the defense is going to try to do.
Right. All right, one more question. So I'm just going to move to the Eastern Conference now. We've been hearing that, you know, Kevin Love, or I shouldn't say hearing, but we've been seeing that, you know, Kevin Love wasn't fitting in, quote-unquote, fitting in with, you know, the Cavs now that he's out, you know, for the rest of the playoffs. Why is it that, you know, it's so much of a big deal that he's not on, you know, he's not playing in the playoffs? The fact that he has no playoff experience, why is it such a big thing now, you know? You know, if it's affecting the Cavs ceiling or whatnot, why now?
Because it's hard to replace 19 points and 12 rebounds, guys, per night in your lineup.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
Kevin Love really started to fit in with this basketball team the last month or so, where he's a guy that can post up and get that little floater, fade away shot in the lane. He can be that stretch four and knock down three-pointers because Kyrie Irving and LeBron James have been so good with the basketball that they find him with J.R. Smith for open shots. And, yeah, he's not the star of this basketball team. I clearly understand that. But where are they going to find that extra 19 points and 12 rebounds that he provided? I mean, LeBron and Kyrie do enough as it is. But that's going to ask a lot of a Tristan Thompson, for example, to do that, or a Timofey Mozgov to do that. That kind of production that you knew you could count on. You knew LeBron was going to get 28 to 30. You knew Kyrie Irving was capable of that. But you also realize, hey, Kevin Love will give us 19 to 20 points. That's 80 points between three guys, and that makes it such a difficult team.
Right.
Now the Cavaliers become a little bit easier to defend because that stretch four is not in their basketball team, unless Kendrick Perkins gets in touch with his inner Shaquille O'Neal, you're not going to find those points to the Cleveland Cavaliers. So I think that's why a lot of people have made a big noise about that, because when you get into the playoffs and you know that guys can knock down shots and you take that guy away, it's incumbent that other people are going to have to step up. You just wonder if Amon Shumpert can do it, if J.R. Smith can do it. That's going to be the biggest question mark. And now they're facing a Bulls team that's a lot longer than the team they faced in the first round in the Boston Celtics. And Tom Thibodeau and those guys have been waiting for this opportunity to show exactly that they still feel they're a better basketball team than Cleveland. And now Cleveland is minus one guy that they really needed to help them.
So I'm coming to that, also to that Cleveland Bulls series that's going to happen tomorrow. Who you got in terms of winning the series? You got the Bulls, you got the Cavs, because, you know, the Bulls now with Rose coming back, he seems to be getting back to that MVP form, kind of, even though he's been playing a lot of minutes lately, so I don't know how long that effect will be on him. Jimmy Butler has been playing pretty much 40 minutes a night, and it's just ridiculous how much minutes he's been playing. You got the Bulls coming out of that into the Eastern Conference Finals or the Cavs?
You know, I think if Kevin Love was not injured, I probably would have taken Cleveland in six, but I'm going to take the Bulls in this series because I know that their stars have played a lot of minutes, but this is the deepest team that they've had ever since Derrick Rose has gotten there. You mentioned Jimmy Butler, but Mike Dunleavy was terrific versus the Milwaukee Bucks the last two games of that series. You add a Pau Gasol to go with Joakim Noah and Taj Gibson off the bench. Mirotić has been outstanding. He's really started to come on as a rookie for the Chicago Bulls, playing inside and outside basketball. You also have, you know, Kirk Heinrich is getting back, so Derrick Rose will have to play 40 minutes per night. You can back that off a little bit. And I think because of the way they guard people and make it so difficult on you to get open shots or find those open shots, and now not having another guy that could punish your defense, especially on the front line, that's why I'm leaning towards the Bulls winning this series in six. I think their defense and their toughness, and I honestly believe the way they played against Milwaukee in the two games they lost was a wake-up call for them. After going up 3-0, they probably figured it was going to be an easy series. The tougher it has been on this basketball team, the more they've been able to seem to rise to the occasion, and they've been eyeballing the Cleveland Cavaliers since the season got started. So the last thing they want is to go into this series, Cleveland is short of one play that they really need, and they lose it no matter how great LeBron and Kyrie Irving are going to be. So I'll take the Bulls, but believe me, it's a shaky pick. It wouldn't be that way if Kevin Love was on the basketball team for Cleveland. I probably would go with the Cavaliers.
Talking here to ESPN radio host Freddie Coleman on AM 1240 Sports Talk every Sunday at 8 p.m. Freddie, let's switch gears to the NFL draft. Jets versus Giants, they always get measured up against each other, and they'll finally play in the regular season. But with all the hoopla that the Jets created with their late drafts, going to get Bryce Petty and even flipping the seventh rounder for Zach Stacy, did they win the draft over the Giants?
I don't think anybody really wins a draft, and here's why I say that. I mean, I love what the Giants are getting, Eric Flowers and Landon Collins. I think both of those guys are going to help. I believe the same thing about the New York Jets. No one thought that Leonard Williams was going to fall to them. And when you think about it, they got an extra draft pick in Zach Stacy, a man that ran for over 1,000 yards two seasons ago for the St. Louis Rams. You pretty much get him for a song. So I'll never say that somebody wins a draft, because we really don't know what's going to happen when these players get on an NFL field in an NFL system, because there's going to be that adjustment period. But I will say both of these teams, whatever needs they were looking to fill, whatever places they were looking to fortify, I thought they were able to do that with the picks they selected in the draft or what the Jets did in free agency. If you're the new head coach of the Jets, Todd Bowles, you wanted your defense to be better around the front seven. I think that front seven that the Jets have is as good as any front seven in the AFC. And now you bring in Darrell Revis and Antonio Cromartie and Buster Skrine. Your secondary is immediately better. And then you get a Brandon Marshall who, for some reason, while he's welcoming the Chicago Bears, if anything, they got rid of the wrong guy. They should have gotten rid of Jay Cutler and kept Brandon Marshall.
Exactly.
You add him, and now you add Zach Stacy in your backfield. You helped out your offensive line in free agency in the draft. If Geno Smith is not your guy, then Ryan Fitzpatrick is a stopgap. You hope that by drafting Bryce Petty in the fourth round that that guy is going to help you. And if those guys aren't the answer, then you go out and get somebody else in free agency that's going to make your team a better football team. And I feel the same way about the New York Giants. They're going to get Victor Cruz back. So now you got Victor Cruz and Odell Beckham Jr. Not a lot of teams have two guys that can play like that and go get the football from Eli Manning. They helped out their offensive line. They did a little bit in defensively in free agency. So I'm not going to say that either team won the draft or won it over the other. But what these teams wanted to do, what their needs were going into free agency in the NFL draft, I think the Jets and Giants more than adequately were able to fill those positions Now both of these teams are hoping to make it work when they get back on the football field.
All right, so coming back to the Jets, do you think Geno Smith, this is the year where he actually breaks out? Because, you know, it's been 2 years already he's been to the league. He has more turnovers than pretty much anybody in the league. You think with all these weapons that he has, with Brandon Marshall, with Decker, with Curley, with the wide receiver they drafted, possibly Jason Morrow, if he breaks out in a tight end position, they got the running backs now. Is this the year where he can prove to everybody that he can be a starting quarterback in this league?
It's going to have to be, because we've seen flashes of what Geno Smith has been able to do, but it has not been consistent. For example, last year he was the only quarterback in the National Football League that had a perfect passer rating in a game, and he did that in the final game of the season versus Miami.
Yeah.
That means we've seen what he can do. The question is, where is that consistency going to come from? And the best thing that can help Geno Smith is that his offensive coordinator is Chan Gailey. Chan Gailey is a really, really terrific offensive coordinator, especially when it comes to helping young quarterbacks in a new system. I mean, people seem to forget E.J. Manuel was playing pretty well his rookie season with the Buffalo Bills. I don't know what happened last year, but Chan Gailey was the offensive coordinator when those two were together. He did a great job with him. He did a great job in Pittsburgh with Cordell Stewart and then Ben Roethlisberger, getting those guys up to speed. So he has a really good understanding of how to help young quarterbacks in a new system. So that may be the best offseason acquisition by the New York Jets. The fact they brought in a Chan Gailey to say, we know Geno Smith has ability. He has a terrific arm. He has terrific speed. And he seems to not get overwhelmed at times. He seems not to panic. I think that's been a knock on him that may not be exactly fair. But if he's not able to figure this out with all these weapons that he has around him that he has not had before in the 2 years of the New York Jets and an offensive coordinator in Chan Gailey, and Todd Bowles is going to make sure that his defense will help Geno Smith win ball games. It does not have to be the other way around. If Geno Smith can't figure that out and have that consistency, then you know what? There's always the Arena Football League. There's always the Canadian Football League. But he's not going to be a starting quarterback in the National Football League, because everything is in front of him where he can make this work and make the Jets maybe not the winner of the AFC East, but a threat to be above Buffalo, be above Miami in a division in the AFC East that's gotten far more interesting with all the moves we've seen from those teams not named New England in the offseason.
All right, so coming into the AFC, there's one team that seems to be, I guess, a threat to a lot of teams, and that's the Ravens. And I know last year they were pretty much one play away from getting to the AFC Championship and possibly getting to the Super Bowl. They made a lot of good moves in the draft. Do you see the Ravens becoming possibly Super Bowl contenders next year?
Absolutely, because I don't know how Ozzie Newsome does it as a general manager, but people forget he was a Hall of Fame tight end. He's a Hall of Fame general manager, what he's been able to do for the Baltimore Ravens. Guys that he brings in a free agency, he always seems to find the right draft choices. And the one thing that he does, I think, is better than anybody. He never keeps players a year beyond their shelf life. A lot of people say, why are you getting Haloti Ngata? Well, Ozzie Newsome looked at that and said, I would love to keep him. I don't think he can help us anymore. If we see a decline from Haloti Ngata, we'll know why. Ozzie Newsome is really good at getting guys in and make them better and have the coaching staff with John Harbaugh make them better. But he's also been very good not keeping guys past their due date. When the milk gets sour, he throws the milk out. He doesn't try to get another day out of it to see if it's going to taste good in the cereal. He doesn't do that. So he's been very good at that. And I think anytime you have a guy like that, a plan in place, you have John Harbaugh, who's still one of the more underrated coaches in the National Football League.
Absolutely.
We've seen what Joe Flacco has been able to do. He's gone into New England twice and beaten Tom Brady in a playoff game, and he almost did it two other times, last year when they had a big lead, and 3 years before that when they had the lead in the AFC Championship game and lost it because Lee Evans could not hold on to the football and they missed the field goal at the end. So anytime Ozzie Newsome and John Harbaugh are breathing, the Baltimore Ravens are always going to be a threat in the AFC, because the players that they have, the system that they have, and the belief that they have, they're always going to be a threat in the AFC.
All right.
Sticking with NFL here, we got Jameis Winston, who was selected number one overall by the Buccaneers, and then you got Mariota taken by, you know, Tennessee with the second pick. Are these two young men, you know, franchise changers, and can they bring, you know, both of these organizations back to prominence as they once were, you know, in sort of the, like, early 2000s?
It's going to take a while. I think Marcus Mariota has a better team right now than Jameis Winston. Even though Jameis Winston has better receivers, Vincent Jackson and Mike Evans are no slouches, and you can play basketball with those guys in the back of the end zone because they're so tall and they have that advantage. I think overall as a team, Tennessee right now is a better team with Marcus Mariota than what Jameis Winston has in Tampa. It's still going to take a while because I still think Jameis is more NFL ready than Marcus Mariota to really step in and make an impact right away. But make no mistake about it. If you're Lovie Smith for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers or you're Ken Whisenhunt, the head coach of Tennessee, they're going to do everything they can to make sure whatever pieces we put are going to be there. For Jameis Winston, it seems like the offensive line has to step up because he has the receivers and he has a running back. They hope that Russell Martin can come back and be the kind of back that we saw his rookie year. You look at Marcus Mariota. I know that Tennessee took a chance on Dorial Green-Beckham, who is a very talented wide receiver, but troubled wide receiver as well, just like Josh Gordon. He had the same kind of issues in college that we saw from Josh Gordon. Josh Gordon can ball, but he can't get out of his own way. Tennessee is hoping that a Dorial Green-Beckham can do the same thing. You're getting a guy that has maybe as much talent as any wide receiver going into this draft, maybe even more than Kevin White, who got taken by Chicago, or Amari Cooper, who got taken by the Oakland Raiders. So I think both of these guys have to understand, meaning the head coaches, that there's still a long, bumpy road. But when you have guys like that that have that ability to raise their level and raise everybody else's level, that is something that Tampa Bay and Tennessee are counting on. And both of these organizations are going to make sure whatever we need to do to surround them with the right people on and off the football field, we're going to have to do that because we're able to, and they're able to use that and trampoline off of that. It could be a golden age for both of these franchises competing and being in the playoffs, maybe more than anybody could have imagined.
Freddie Coleman joins us here on AM 1240 Sports Talk every Sunday at 8 p.m. Freddie, speaking of first-round quarterbacks, you mentioned the Browns a little bit earlier. Johnny Manziel, it's funny, just last year, even with all the off-the-field situations, he was still regarded as a pretty good pro quarterback. 1 year later, there was even speculation of the Browns maybe taking a quarterback pretty early in the draft. What's your take on Manziel's outlook for the 2015 season?
Well, I thought it would have been stupid if Cleveland took another quarterback because what kind of message are you sending to Johnny Manziel, a guy that you maneuvered yourself into a different part of the first round to make sure you could take him at quarterback? And yet, if this is a dividing line for him, if we can look back at this and say that's when Johnny Manziel realized that if he doesn't play to his talent, he's not going to be in the NFL. Even his outstanding left tackle, Joe Thomas, said it's night and day compared to what we've seen from Johnny Manziel. I don't question his ability and talent. I question could he be serious about it. Maybe now we're going to see that from Johnny Manziel. But can you imagine the circus it would have been had the Cleveland Browns trade up into the number two pick and then they take Marcus Mariota? It would have been Hard Knocks Part 25, once again on HBO, for something like that to happen. So I think the Browns, and specifically their owner, Jimmy Haslam, you have to do a better job letting people do their jobs. You have to let Ray Farmer, the general manager, do his job. You have to have the head coach, Mike Pettine, do his job and get out of their way. I think Jimmy Haslam wants to win so bad that he feels he has to put his stamp on things. But that's why you hire these people to let them do that. If they're not good at it, you bring somebody else in. I think Cleveland understands that, you know what, this has to be our guy, because we put a lot of time and invested a lot of money in him. And if he's not our guy after 2 years, okay. But you can't make that decision after 1 year. And I think if they had done that, brought in another quarterback, that would have wrecked this team. And who knows if the Cleveland Browns would have been able to recover over a 3-4 year period. So by giving him another opportunity to see, okay, we're giving it to you again, Johnny Manziel. We know that last year was a different deal. We got it. But if they had brought in another quarterback, that would not have been a good situation and would not have had anything or everything to do with Johnny Manziel still being on this football team.
All right. That's pretty much it. We got a little bit of time here, but go to break. But thank you, Mr. Coleman, for being on the show. I hope to hear from you soon. I'm definitely going to hear you on ESPN Radio. I always do at night. So thank you for being on the show.
My pleasure, gentlemen. Yeah, you guys have a great rest of the show, and I'll talk to you soon, okay?
All right. Bye.
Thank you much.
Thank you.
Hold on a little. All right, so we got interesting stuff about the NFL draft, and we got another writer coming in approximately 3 minutes from now. But, you know, getting to NBA playoffs, I just want to end it from there from an NBA playoff standpoint. What do you guys got coming out of the East and West then? You got the Warriors, you got the Cavs, who you got?
We're going to see a Warriors-Bulls final.
You really think so?
I really think so. And going back to the point that Freddie was making during the segment, losing Kevin Love is huge. You're not going to be able to replace that production very easily. But I think most importantly, looking at the Bulls, this is the team they needed to have 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah.
They finally have the offensive pieces. All throughout the year, without Derrick Rose, Nate Robinson had to be a hero against the Nets just a couple years ago. And even back then, the issue was, okay, will they score enough to even out their well-played defense? This year they can. They have Mirotić and Snell off the bench. Jimmy Butler's become one of the best two-way players in the NBA. Derrick Rose is no longer MVP Derrick Rose, but even less than MVP Derrick Rose is better than nearly many point guards in the NBA.
Who's got Grashon?
To an extent, I disagree with Ungwa. I don't know. You sort of jumped the gun. I mean, look at these matchups: the Hawks versus Wizards. You got Cavs and Bulls. We know the whole nine. But yeah. I mean, any of these series can go to seven. I'm not saying that the Bulls and Warriors can't be a finals matchup. But I mean, give these other teams credits. I feel like the Wizards can do something special here.
Yeah, they did.
And I feel like the Clippers can do something special here too. I mean, knocking out the defending champs.
Seven games.
These guys are probably poised and confident in all areas, knowing that okay, we just took out the Spurs, now we face the Rockets. I mean, anything can go both.
You know what I got?
Both ways.
This is a gutsy call. I got Wizards and Clippers.
Of course you do.
Hey, you just read my mind.
Of course you do.
I got the same thing too.
I could see that
happening. Both are crazy.
It could happen.
You said I was crazy when the Hawks wouldn't win, but what happened?
Wizards
underrated team,
though. That's
not that crazy though. Yeah, For total context, ladies and gentlemen, I actually picked the Nets to beat the Hawks in seven games.
Now, that's a crazy man.
No. Listen here. Again, my take was that the Hawks, it wasn't that I had a bunch of faith in the Nets, because the Nets really underachieved the entire season.
Yeah.
It was more about having less faith in the Hawks, which makes sense because I didn't think they had the go-to scorer, and I thought with push came to shove, Brook Lopez could eat in the post all day, because even though Al Horford's a great defender, he's only 6'9".
Yeah.
And, well, they didn't.
You can make the case for any team.
Yeah, it could be worse than
any team going into the finals right now.
Yeah.
I can see any of these teams get into the finals.
Clippers, Wizards, it could be Clippers, Bulls, it could be Warriors, Wizards. It could go either way.
There's no clear cut to me.
See what happens. So, we take a quick break here. In a half hour, when we come back, we'll have Thomas Emmerich, NFL Brian, discuss more on the NFL draft and also the NFL season ahead. This is here, Sports Talk 12:40 a.m.
Sports Radio New York and AM 1240 WBBB are proud to announce the new Sports Talk 1240, along with the launch of a brand new website at sportstalk1240.com. Check out our new site for information about upcoming shows, as well as easy access to past shows, articles, our live studio webcam, and more. Of course, be sure to tune in to Sports Talk 1240 every Sunday night from 8 to 10 p.m. on AM 1240 WGBB, or visit sportstalk1240.com for ways to listen to the live broadcast online or from your iPhone. We're excited about these new changes and hope you will be too.
So you're looking for a great club but don't want to go into Manhattan, or you'd like to find a new restaurant to check out, or you're buying a house here on Long Island and you'd like to find out about a certain area. Wouldn't it be nice if you could find out all the information in just one spot? Well, you can. LongIslandExchange.com. It's all you need to find out all about Long Island. LongIslandExchange.com for hotspots, classifieds, news, and more. LongIslandExchange.com is designed with only the Long Islander in mind. Get the best of Long Island. LongIslandExchange.com. Discover Long Island all over again at LongIslandExchange.com.
If you're trying to quit smoking, dipping, or chewing tobacco, you don't have to do it alone. Nicotine Anonymous is a 12-step program of recovery that meets regularly in your area. There are no dues or fees. The only requirement for membership is a desire to be free of nicotine. For information and meetings near you, call 877-TRY-NIC-A. That's 877-TRY-NICA, or visit nicotine-anonymous.org. Let us share our experience, strength, and hope with you.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240. Check us out every Sunday night at 8 p.m. right here on AM 1240 WGBB. And visit us online at sportstalk1240.com.
Making simple changes in your everyday travel choices makes a big difference to New York's air quality. Trip chain, use mass transit, ride share, bike, or walk. Visit cleanairny.org to learn more. Clean Air New York, breathe it in. A public service message brought to you by the New York State Department of Transportation.
And now, back to Sports Talk 1240.
Back here on Sports Talk 12:40 a.m. with Ugo and Graciano. And, we're coming to the NFL draft. We got in with sports writer Thomas Emmerich. And first of all, Emmerich, it's great for you being on the show. How are you doing this evening?
Good, good. How are you, Raymond?
I'm doing good. So I guess I want to start off with a little bit more on the draft. Who do you think was the winner of the draft, and who do you think were the losers, in your opinion?
As far as winner of the draft, you have to like what the Washington Redskins did by not kind of trading up to get Mariota. And, of course, earlier they hit the fifth-year option on Robert Griffin III, but just kind of focusing on building up the roster in year one with Scott McLuhan. It's hard to fault a team for not finding like a good trade-down offer. Sometimes it's not just there. But they got a guy like Brandon Scherff, the pulverizing kind of run blocker that Jay Gruden offense really needs to thrive. And that was the type of player they really needed to add, I felt. Preston Smith, who's kind of passes the threshold for a fourth player. And the Redskins didn't kind of get one of those off-the-edge rushers like Vic Beasley or Shane Ray, but they did get a versatile front seven piece in Preston Smith that I think could cause some additional disruption up front. They already have Jason Hatcher and Paella to get some pass pressure there. As far as losing the draft, I have trouble really giving a team a loser grade until we see how it pans out. I was a little surprised to see the New York Giants they kind of came out of the draft with a major question at like deep safety still. Thompson was taken in the fifth round. He himself was surprised he was picked at all in the draft. And so NFLDraftScout.com, CBS Sports had him as their 664th prospect overall, I think it was. So that was surprising. And then they traded up. They didn't have a fourth rounder. They did land Landon Collins. He's kind of a cheaper Antrel role instead of making $37 million over 5 years. He's going to be on a second round rookie contract. So that's a nice change up there for what they're paying at the strong safety. And Odigizuwa is kind of a nice pick there too, depending on how they find a way to use him and get edge pressure out of him. I think he can be shifted inside some too. They got some versatile pieces there along with Ayers. But overall, the Giants aren't looking like a team where you're confident about the last line of defense, though, at the safety position still. Landon Collins is a nice guy, buzzing in. But as far as like deep middle, it's still a major question. So I had a major question there. I wouldn't call them a draft loser, but they just kind of left that question in my mind.
All right. Thomas Unquasonia, glad you could join us tonight. The Jets having the number 6 pick, personally, I was a little bit surprised that they continued to shore up that front seven, but what set Leonard Williams apart from the rest of the pack?
Yeah, so it seems like that was a best player available type move for the Jets, and by many accounts, he's considered, quote, the most safest player in the draft, but is there really such thing as a safe draft pick? I'm always incurring a risk just by selecting a rookie. But he has an array of moves and versatility that I think can be used quite well in Todd Bowles' system. He had Calais Campbell line up everywhere, and some people will comp him to Calais Campbell. As far as their three-man base front, we'll probably see. You could see that expanded to four if in certain situations, especially on early downs, maybe you find ways to keep Damon Harrison on the field at the nose tackle position. And then in passing downs, the master of sub packages will kind of spread the unit out. Maybe even have Lorenzo Malden, the third rounder, kind of on some of those A and B gap blitzes, along with coming off the edge. Bowles is going to be very creative with that. And I think you see a three-man front of Leonard Williams, Muhammad Wilkerson, and Sheldon Richardson on passing downs with, a couple edge rushers and five, six, who knows, sometimes maybe even seven defensive backs. Bowles, very creative when you give him some moving pieces, and he has those.
Hey, Thomas Graciano here speaking. How are you today?
Good. How are you?
Good, good, good. Now, moving from AFC to the NFC, I know, you know, the whole speculation with, you know, NFL free agency and the draft and the trades, which were all crazy. But I just wanted to get your outlook on the NFC East right now because, you know, you got Shady McCoy out of, you know, Philadelphia. You got Murray in Philadelphia. He's off of, you know, the Cowboys team. You got, you know, the Redskins rebuilding. You got Victor Cruz coming back to the Giants alongside, you know, Odell Beckham Jr. What's your outlook on, you know, the NFC East, and who is the clear-cut favorite in that division?
Yeah, I have a hard time putting the Cowboys back to that second, third range after the way they played last year and overcame a lot of things, overcame a defense that on paper shouldn't have been very good at all, and they were actually serviceable. That is a defense you could actually live with. And they add a couple dangerous options in the pass rush with Randy Gregory, kind of, you could argue a steal there in the second round, given the talent he has.
Yeah.
And then Greg Hardy, once he's off suspension, that's a scary sub-package the Dallas defense can throw at you. And, of course, the offense will remain the strength there. I don't think there's a defensive line in the division that is going to kind of push the Cowboys' offensive line back in the run game. There are some talented defensive lines in that division, but I think the alpha dog, as far as it comes to, you know, who has the biggest edge in a trench game, it's Dallas Cowboys offensive line versus anyone in the run game.
Right.
The question is whether, you know, Darren McFadden can stay healthy, Joseph Randall, how is he a more often used change of pace back? I think those questions are still leaving answers that might, you know, that might come at some point this offseason. Maybe they do end up finding a way to get another gem to that running game, another hidden gem. But as far as the offensive line they have there, that's the single most physically kind of pulverizing unit in this division, and I think that's going to get the run game going no matter who's back there. And then, of course, they're also protecting Tony Romo.
Right. So you got the Cowboys, you know, on top in this division?
Yes.
I mean, prior to this year, you know, with DeMarco Murray's production previous, like I said, people have been saying, you know, why don't you give the ball to Murray? You know, he's you know, an elite running back. Now that he's not on that team, do you think they can, like, still, you know, be up there, be up top with, like, some of the up-and-coming teams in the NFL? Or do they kind of regress? Do they, you know, stay stagnant? Do they improve? Where do they really go from here?
Right. So last year, you could argue they're definitely one of the top three teams in the NFL, and things broke a little differently in Lambeau Field at the end with the replay crew and the interpretation of that what turned out to be a drop for Dez Bryant.
Yes.
That goes differently. That team might have a Super Bowl ring right now. That's not a crazy thing to say.
Ooh, wow. I mean, but, Packers fan here. I mean, speaking, who's to say, you know, Aaron Rodgers with a minute left with,
hey,
you know.
Chill.
I'm just saying,
chill.
Thomas.
You had me in agreement, too. I felt confident that the top four teams there, and it was very close, were New England, Seattle, Green Bay, and Dallas. I felt like those teams were kind of at a different level than the other 28 teams in the league. And I would still say Green Bay has a better shot at taking the NFC. But I think Dallas also has a chance to be even better after they're certainly a Super Bowl contender last year. I think they're going to be a pain of an out for Green Bay in the postseason if they happen to meet each other again this year. I don't think they will regress. I think Tony Romo last season was he played a little more conservatively, but that also allowed him to play some of the best football, probably the best football of his entire career. He's one of the best two or three quarterbacks, especially down the stretch last season. And when you have him playing at that level behind an offensive line that is young and is just going to continue to gel, you have Dez Bryant one of the top three receivers in the league, Terrence Williams coming along too, and then a defense that still thin at some spots, especially at defensive back, still a little thin there. Defensive interior, very thin there. But they added some dangerous pass rushing elements and kind of the perfect type of guys for that dangerous third down sub package in Randy Gregory and Greg Hardy. Once he gets off his suspension, they just have to kind of navigate that time between the week one and Hardy coming back.
Right. Thomas Emmer joining us here on Sports Talk 1240 every Sunday from 8 to 10 p.m. Thomas, I was looking over some of your work, and I like the breakdown you had of Todd Gurley being drafted by the Rams. What's your personal take on the way St. Louis sort of managed that first-round pick of the Georgia running back?
Yeah, so I guess the main question is, what good is a first-round running back if he doesn't have a good offensive line to run behind? And what is can you ever have a good value by taking a running back in the first round in this day and age? I think there are exceptions to the rule. I think most of the time, over the past 10 years, those first-round running back picks didn't hit that value almost every time. But there are certain cases where if you get a guy who makes up for your offensive line deficiencies, who makes guys miss and picks up extra yards afterwards on a regular basis, in the way you see with Marshawn Lynch and Adrian Peterson, that they can create that running game. They basically lift the entire offensive line and create some of that running game on their own. Kind of break the will of the interior defense in some ways as well, which also benefits your offensive line. Now, I'm not saying Gurley's going to be, for a first like Lynch or Peterson, who are first rounders, but if he is a special, exceptional athlete, if he ends up being that type of a guy you could easily consider a top five running back, then in that situation, maybe it is worth taking him 10th overall. They have Nick Foles at starting quarterback right now, so they absolutely need to be leaning on their running game.
All right. So coming to the draft, and now it's over and everything, I know it's pretty early right now, but who you got, I guess, going back to the Super Bowl? You got the Seahawks still coming back there, the Patriots possibly, even though the pieces that they lost, you got any of those teams or maybe somebody from the AFC or NFC?
Yeah, so, of course, the Patriots and Seahawks are a decent bet. I'm sure they have the highest odds of returning as the Super Bowl matchup next season. I believe that I'm not sure which one you said it, but Packers, of course, are going to be in that mix, too. I think the Cardinals, honestly, if Carson Palmer can stay healthy and the offensive front, which they added to again in the draft with DJ Humphreys, if he can develop a lot quicker than some think he can, and the offensive line can get some push in the run game, if they can help Carson Palmer out a little bit there, and the defense takes at least stays at that level or close to the level, even without Todd Bowles, I think they could be in the mix too. A lot of really good defensive backs on that defense. They got a depth there that matches anyone's. I think Cowboys are in the mix. I think if Chip Kelly can find a way to get the best out of Sam Bradford, probably too late to get Mariota now, but if Chip Kelly can get the best out of Sam Bradford, I truly believe that offense can give, can beat any team in a given week in January, especially the way they'll be able to run in and turn short throws into big gains. Of course, if Peyton Manning's body can stay intact, Broncos will be in that mix as well.
Yeah. You got any by chance the Colts possibly getting into the Super Bowl? Because they were one game away last year, and I know that they pretty much got blown out at Foxborough, but the pieces that they made in the offseason, the draft picks that they have, is the possibility of them going into the Super Bowl?
Oh, sure, yes. I'd say also the Colts Steelers and Ravens are all in there. They all have a puncher's chance to make it. I think give Andrew Luck, one game. He can, if he's playing to the best of his abilities, they can beat any team. They need to be able to hold up against, kind of like a bruising power running attack like the Patriots have been able to throw at them. When that trump card is thrown at them, they need to be able to respond, and they haven't. And so the front seven is going to have to answer questions that they failed to in previous seasons. I think that's the biggest difference for them. And, of course, Ravens are always in the mix with how good their defense is every season, how Joe Flacco can turn it on for stretches during a season and suddenly look like, a $27 million quarterback.
Thomas, we asked our prior guest about, the Jets' whole quarterback conundrum, and I figure I'd pitch that question to you as well, especially with Bryce Petty being picked in the fifth round. How do you see the Jets' quarterback situation sorting out in the early going?
Yeah, so I imagine Petty is in sort of the Logan the Cardinals had Logan Thomas as essentially their third quarterback who they wanted to keep off the field at almost all costs for at least this year, kind of more of a developmental project. So this year I think Petty's probably out of the equation. They brought in Ryan Fitzpatrick to go against Geno Smith, and I'm sure the Jets, at least they should want Geno Smith to win that battle. You want the young quarterback you drafted who's only been in the league 3 years now. You want that quarterback to develop and be someone you can have on roster for the next 6 years. Of course, he has to earn it. That's the problem. Maybe he won't. But you'd like him to beat out the journeyman veteran who's kind of at the twilight of his career in Ryan Fitzpatrick. I guess we'll find out in training camp and preseason who gets the ball week one.
Do you see the Jets possibly being a wild card team this year?
I think they certainly have a shot. I think Geno Smith has been an interesting player. He'll have games that are completely indefensible, and he'll have like a Geno go home you're drunk game, against the Bills, like moments like that where I've tried to tell people, hey, I think Geno could potentially be an average quarterback, and then he has that kind of game, and I have no defense. And then, of course, but then he'll also, the second you give up on him, he'll end the season with like a 5-to-1 touchdown interception ratio with like 600 yards in like the final couple of weeks to close out 2-0. And you're like, okay, I guess, maybe I can open my heart to get stabbed by Geno again. But I honestly think he could potentially be an average, serviceable starting quarterback that with, a perfectly, a well-schemed offense, which under Morningweg it was the opposite of that, where you get a well-schemed offense and a defense that takes a lot of the pressure off you, I think you can get to the playoffs with a quarterback like Geno Smith. It's just a matter of him having those go home, you're drunk games, and how many of those he has, and can a team really stand behind a guy who will sometimes, throw three picks in his first five passes like he did against Buffalo. That's the question.
All right.
Okay. Graciano speaking. What team do you have surprising, the NFL, whether it be not contender, but, sort of a team that's sort of in rebuild mode or even, sort of gradually trying to get to the status of a, playoff potential team? What team do you have that?
Yeah. The NFC South, anything can happen any year. No matter, you can say the craziest thing you want about the NFC South and something that will happen in that division, and it can't be ruled out. Nothing can be ruled out there. And I think the Tampa Bay Buccaneers have a fighting shot there. Of course, you got Panthers, Falcons, and New Orleans were battling down the stretch with losing records. And before Carolina, had the mercy kill of that division.
Yeah.
But Tampa Bay Buccaneers were a team that at times you thought, were a quarterback and an offensive line away from being kind of interesting. And they added two offensive linemen in the draft. They got Marpet and then Donovan Smith out of Penn State. Mm-hmm. Both after the first round, but both guys that that should be instant starters at guard and tackle. They have, of course, Jameis Winston, who was regarded by most as the most pro-ready quarterback heading into this draft in a much more pro-style offense than you're really seeing in college football these days.
Yeah.
And Jameis did take a step back this year. You know, you see him throw a lot of kind of head-scratchers into underneath coverage. They get picked off. He has those lapses, but you've also just seen so much that shows he can process kind of NFL-style concepts. And he does have the arm to make it happen. He does have a pocket presence that will translate to the NFL. So you also get that quarterback upgrade from the way Josh McCown had been playing. They're for some reason, felt like very stubborn about starting McCown over Glennon, and McCown was awful.
Yeah.
So you're going to get a huge boost at the quarterback position, I would imagine, even from a rookie in Jameis Winston. And, of course, you have some interesting elements of defense, too. You got perhaps the best 4-3 outside linebacker in Levante David, perhaps the best pass-rushing three technique in Gerald McCoy. You got some interesting pieces there where you solidify the quarterback position, you get competent play from a rookie quarterback in Jameis Winston, and suddenly that team's a factor in the division.
All right. Well, that's enough time. We had a good time talking to you about the NFL draft. Hope we hear from you soon, and being when the season starts, we'll be in contact for sure. Thank you.
Yeah, sounds good. Thanks.
All right, have a good night.
Thank you.
You too.
All right, so, you know, interesting stuff in the NFL draft. And, you know, I always thought about the draft as pretty much, I wouldn't say who's the winner from the draft, but it's pretty much, we don't know how these players are going to be on the field. You know, you can have some great picks, but then they could probably produce terribly on the field. And then they'd be like, oh, it's a terrible pick, or it's a scratch in your head saying, your general manager, you picked this guy, you thought he'll be good. I mean, it goes back to last year with the Jets when John Intick had picks where pretty much scratch your head because McDougal didn't even play. They drafted Milner 2 years ago, and he's been injury prone. We already saw that coming. Calvin Pryor was an interesting pick. You know, we're going to see what he is this year. But the draft, is in my opinion, even in the offseason, free agency, both of them, it wasn't exactly who wins. It's just who's going to produce on the field more when the season comes.
And the funny thing about it is, especially when you look at the Jets, it felt like last year's draft, it felt like they were drafting just to fill spots.
Yeah.
If I'm being brutally honest about it, because at the very least in this draft, you see pieces that may not contribute right away, but you at least see where it fits. Meanwhile, last year was just haphazard. In 2 years, the only two picks that were ever worth it were prior last year because he'll now get to play his actual position, strong safety.
Yeah.
And then you obviously had Sheldon Richardson the year before. So, I mean, look, the Jets have put themselves into a very, very solid situation. And even the Giants, they didn't do as much as I thought they would, but they also had a little bit less to do. They just had to add a bit more talent on the offensive line, I think, with the receiving corps as well.
Yeah.
I agree with you, Uncle. And going back to what you said, you know, talking about the winners and losers, it all depends on, you know, positioning. You know, let's say, for instance, you know, bad teams and good teams. Good teams, you know, they go for the complementary players, players that might not have that much of an impact, but you fit those guys into your system, you know, they make your team that much better. Now, going on, you know, to, you know, the not-so-good teams, yeah, you're going to need to have those key, you know, players like Jameis, Mariota, you know, Dante Flower, those type of players to, you know, really impact your team. So, winners and losers, a lot of people won and a lot of people lost, but it all depends on, you know, the position and where they were.
So what do you guys think expect from the Jets and Giants this season? Or maybe in training camp, because I know for one thing, the Jets are going to be ready for training camp. With or without Wilkerson's contract dispute on him getting paid, they're just going to be ready as much as they can. The quarterback battle between Fitzpatrick and Smith. And the Giants, well, we'll figure out what Beckham and Victor Cruz, how they work together. And Eli Manning, possibly making that offense top 10, top 5.
Well, that was everything. I don't know why you pointed to me.
It's a new age for the Jets. I mean, they got a new head coach, they got a new GM, and they're finally starting to, you know, go in the right direction. And I, I see them, like you said, being a wild card, you know, team this year.
I think they can win the division outright.
You think they could beat the Patriots?
There's no reason why they can't win their division outright. Last couple of years, yeah, you'd ask, maybe they don't really have much of a shot. But especially this year, I mean, across the board, New England lost a fair share of pieces, including one that switched teams, a.k.a. Darrelle Revis. And yes, Tom Brady will always be Tom Brady. There's no mistaking that. But this might be the first time in about maybe 4 or 5 years that there will be a Jets team that not only expects to win, because every team expects to win against whomever they play.
Realistically.
But it's realistic, and on paper, they actually have the pieces.
I think they're better than the Bills.
It's not even a question. Paper. It's not a question. They're better than the Bills on paper.
Oh, see, Rex Ryan's going to have a little feud with against his former team.
I tell you what, those games are going to be so much fun, because Buffalo already has a very strong and opinionated fan base. So pitting them against Jets fans, it's going to be hilarious to watch. And seeing how both teams will interact on the field, because, you know, Rex Ryan has a couple of his guys that he took from the Jets, including some of the coaches as well. It's going to be a weird mix of a family reunion and a grudge match. It's going to be really fun to see.
Uh-huh. I agree. I mean, Sammy Watkins and Shady McCoy on the same team.
Look out for that.
Good luck against that defense, though.
Yeah, that's the only problem. Good luck with that defense against the Jets. But we'll see what happens. You know, it's going to be great. Hopefully, it'll be a great NFL season, and the training camp will figure out what the Jets and Giants will be doing. So we got a little bit of time here, and I guess I just want to get into the Rangers a little bit, because, you know, they're the only New York team in the playoffs right now. And
shouts out, man.
And, you know, Islanders were out in the first round, which is disappointing because we wanted to see Islanders and Rangers in the second round. But, you know, Rangers just won yesterday. Now they're 1-1. What do you expect from the Rangers, really? Do you think they could go all the way to the Stanley Cup and possibly win it this time?
Absolutely. I mean, I think the writing's on the wall, and I think the most important part about this matchup is that they've beaten the Capitals before. Before, it was always a constant battle, and the Rangers couldn't quite get over the hump. But this year, they dropped game one, which hurts.
Yeah.
But they're not scared of the Verizon Center. Will it be down in five? I don't think so. It helps that they finished off the first round in five. But if they can finish it in six games, that'll be good for them, because the last thing they need is another seven-game series, because they have way too many of those.
Well, I think, you know, the Rangers have had probably one of the historical seasons they've ever seen from this franchise, but I think the one thing that I lack from the Rangers, and I always thought of this, what's stopping them from winning the Stanley Cup, is the physicality they have against other teams. I feel like last year when they lost to the Kings, the reason why they lost because the Kings were pretty much the better physical team, and the Rangers have more speed than them. But the mental toughness that the Kings showed in the Stanley Cup, coming back down one each goal and then winning it in overtime against them and then winning it in the last game at Staples Center. I just hope the Rangers understand that they had to be mentally tougher than most of these teams.
And again, last year it was all seven-game series. I mean, every single series went the maximum. Your body can only do so much.
Yeah.
So it's going to be important for the Rangers to close out every opportunity they get. They can't afford to let extra seven-game series get away from them, because if they can take care of business, there's no reason why they can't go to the Cup and win it.
So you guys got tomorrow NBA, Cavs and Bulls. First game we got?
Bulls.
Not a question, Bulls.
I got the Cavs the first game, even though it's at home.
Of course you do.
Clippers and Rockets, though, you got there. First game.
Got the Rockets, man.
Yeah, I got the Rockets. Clippers are too tired. So, you know, that's all we have here. I'll thank Ukwa and Gracian for being on the show. Sports Talk 12:40 a.m. Also thanking ESPN host Freddie Coleman and sports writer Thomas Hemmer to being on the show and calling in. This is Sports Talk 12:40. Next, we got Gary Harden coming in to talk about possibly the hockey. Later.
Expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.